Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello pod people and welcome to Clash of the Titles, the show where two movies with something in common go head to head to figure out which one does it better. On this week's show, in the red corner, Arnie dons spandex and becomes the most dangerous game in some Spring King courtesy of The Running Man. While in the blue corner, Daniel Radcliffe dons tiger slippers and trades his wand for pistols in Guns Akimbo.
In the year 2017, an innocent man accused of a crime has a choice. Hard time or prime time?
Sensational. Perfect contestant. I want him.
He must pay or play the running man.
On your mark.
I'll be back.
Go!
I'm Miles. And this is the story of the worst day of my life.
Another schism.
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 Schism. Schism picked random psychos, weirdos, and criminals and made them fight each other to the death. So the internet loved it. And then I came into the picture.
You scared yet? Welcome to Schism.
But which film receives a headshot? And which movie wins its freedom? You're about to find out in Clash of the Titles.
Release the Kraken!
Hello, Clash Podders. I'm Chris Tilley.
I'm Vicky Crompton.
And I'm Alex. Don't touch the hair, Zane.
And hot on the heels of Battle Royale versus Hunger Games, we're doing two slightly inferior versions of that same story. So why have you sentenced us to so much death this week, Alex?
Because I loved The Running Man when I saw it as a kid. Mm. And we have been thinking about something to pair it with. And there have been some that I won't mention. We've mused on some, but none of them have been very good. Then I happened upon Guns Akimbo just the other week. And voila, we have a clash.
You thought that was good, did you?
I thought it was similar to The Running
and
Man.
And you're correct.
I am correct, which is what we based the whole system of the show on.
That's
not the quality, whether they fit, but hopefully the quality as well. And what are you saying up front? Literally a whole day before we even talk about it. Like, no, wait, three days
no,
that you hate Guns Akimbo.
No.
Because I can't wait to hear what you think about
it. Oh, really?
Yeah. Suck my what?
Oh, no, good for her. Yeah. I love that line.
It's a good line.
It's like her one good line.
It is. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I'm going to say it right now. Come Thursday, I got a lot of love for Guns Akimbo.
I'm sure you do.
But I also have a lot of love for The Running Man, hence why, at least in my diseased mind, this is a wonderful pairing.
Great.
Well done for setting up a bit of jeopardy. What was your clue, Alex?
My clue was The Boy Who Lived versus The Man Who Ran.
Yeah, should have been The Man Who Ran versus The Boy Who Lived, shouldn't it? I think we both know that.
I mean,
chronologically.
Yeah, chronologically. Yeah.
I followed that up with Kill or Be Killed on the Twitter.
How do people do?
They fired a bunch of correct guesses at us.
Great.
But the winner with a bullet was Matt.
First timer?
No.
Oh, okay.
Long time listener. I reckon he's won it a few times, Matt. I don't think it was his first guess, though, so it's half a win.
Sure.
But your prize...
So harsh.
He still gets a prize.
Not you.
All right, I thought you meant
me. I'm looking at you to agree with
me. Right, yeah.
Like, so harsh, Chris is being. Just didn't flow as much. If I have to look at you and go, isn't Chris being harsh?
Sorry, I was being paranoid.
But Matt still gets a prize, and that is a Captain Freedom exercise DVD.
Oh, brilliant. So he's
funny.
Fantastic.
Jesse Ventura, man. Wow.
Wow, we indeed. So, connection section. What connects these two films?
Shows whose success is based solely on audience figures. Both of them go on about the audience figures.
Isn't that what all shows' successes are?
Yeah, it's a connection between these two movies as
sure,
well.
Sure, all right, fine.
Yeah, because Killian keeps going, we're up 9 points.
Yeah, whatever
and then
that
it's
means.
Like 7 million viewers on Schism.
Which doesn't sound like very many. More people watch EastEnders. What? Old scary man concerned with ratings in charge of death matches.
Arnie's in both. There's a poster of Commando in Guns Akimbo.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Sorry.
Oh, boo.
No, that's good.
Well, I guess then Stephen D'Souza's in both, seeing as he wrote Commando.
Oh, very good.
And Running Man.
Very good.
Yeah. Wow. Remote cameras following the action, either robot cameras or drones. How times have changed.
Fake death of the hero.
Yeah, both movies using exactly the same twist. One of them gets it right, yes. One of them doesn't. Actually, no, both of them screw it up in different ways.
Yeah.
Tracking devices following the contender.
Yeah, I mean, they're very similar. It's sort of winning, you go free, but there's lots.
I mean, Guns Akimbo, I think, does. It owes a serious debt to The Running Man.
Mm, that's why you paired them.
That is why
Excellent.
I paired them. That wasn't a new observation. I was just rehashing an observation I made last week.
Thanks. So on Thursday, Vicky will be splaying her Guns Akimbo.
Wow. That feels like a joke even Guns Akimbo put in there. And there are very few.
Apologies.
To me. Look at me when you say
No, to the listeners.
Yeah, right. Splaying as well, not even spreading.
Gross, both gross.
It's guns.
Guns, yeah.
Try anything else. So I'm doing The Running Man now.
I can't look at you.
Well, no, I'm not surprised. I've been soiled.
No.
Sullied, sorry. I meant to say sullied.
See, both bad, though.
No, sullied is fine.
Really?
Yeah, soiled sounds like a nappy.
So splayed and gross. Sullied. But not spread and soiled.
Correct.
Okay. Should we do The Running Man?
Let's do anything.
I'm going to introduce the film via what I think a pre-production meeting for it sounded like. Is everyone here? Great. Let's adapt a Stephen King book where we can't use his name to promote the movie and have to pretend it's written by a guy who doesn't exist. Let's cast Arnold Schwarzenegger as the everyman so we have to change every single detail of said book. Let's also cast Mick Fleetwood. and Frank Zappa's son, Dweezil. You know those Arnie one-liners that people seem to love? Let's come up with the worst ones we can think of, then put them in the film. Oh, and he's smoking a lot of cigars these days, so we have to write them in. Let's dress our end villain Dynamo in the campest costume imaginable and then have him killed by a sprinkler. And as for directing, let's sack the guy who goes on to make Under Siege and The Fugitive and replace him with the bloke from Starsky and Hutch. Sound good? Great, let's do some more cocaine. So, when did you first see The Running Man, Alex?
I watched this on video when I was about 10 years old, and I remember it distinctly because the decapitation scene at the start, where the guy's running through the invisible barrier, I remember, because I was still a sensitive child back then, going, oh, that's upsetting. I shouldn't be watching this, which means I'm absolutely definitely going to watch the rest of it. And I think, having done a bit of digging this week and some maths, this is my very first Arnie film.
Oh, wow.
That I ever saw.
Before Twins,
yeah.
Wow.
Way before Twins. You know, I've never seen Twins, so yes, before Twins.
Oh, it's great.
We should have done that with Guns Akimbo.
Yeah. Excellent. Vicky, how about yourself?
Oh, I don't know. I was a bit more grown up, though. Like, I don't know, 20s video at some point. Mm. Don't really remember much about it because it is pretty daft, but fun daft.
Yes.
That's it.
Yeah, I was about 13 or 14, I think.
Okay. And not your first Arnie movie?
No, Twins. I think it was probably my first Arnie movie.
I've heard that's good.
And then Commando.
soon after, right. I would say. But yeah, I didn't have Sky, but a friend of my dad's had Sky, and I would give him a list of films to record for me.
Yeah.
And he recorded The Running Man, and then he'd put on the label what kind of violence was in them to warn my parents.
And they still let you watch it. Decapitation within the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, they were fine.
Okay.
And I liked it, but always thought it was sort of second tier Arnie. It's sort of on the B list. So I don't return to it that often.
You see, because it was my first, I never did at the time. Like, obviously, I've seen it since then, and you sort of watch it and you go, wow. Mm. Like, considering, like, I forget, like, this is 1987. And I think when I watched it the first time, I imagined it was maybe 1984, 1983. Yeah. It looks cheaper. It looks older and cheaper than a 1987 movie with Arnie would look, because The Predator came out the same year.
Did. And it was much cheaper to make The Predator.
That's nuts.
By tens of millions. Mm. Crazy. All right, let's do a bit of background. There was more background on this one than I was expecting, but I'll power through it. I'll start with The Most Dangerous Game, 1924 story, 1932 film. Mm. Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's good. It's good and short. It's only about an hour. But the plot
of that... constitute a film?
No.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I thought, does a film have to cross a threshold?
It was 1932. Okay. They hadn't made the rules yet.
Right. That's true, actually.
But the plot of the film concerns, it's a big game hunter who deliberately strands a group of luxury yacht passengers on a remote island where he can hunt them for sport. The most dangerous game being man.
Yeah.
But I think we could probably go back to Roman gladiators. I mean, we've always had this, and probably before then, we've always had this bloodlust in us. And so Stephen King was interested in telling a version of that story. But he was also interested in doing a bit of experimentation to see if he was as popular as he thought he was, or as good a writer, rather, because he worried that if he just slapped Stephen King on the front of a book, even if it was shite, it would sell. And so this is where Richard Bachman came from.
I see.
And it didn't actually work that well. The Bachman novels did not sell. Well, in any particular numbers.
It kind of worked, yeah. Didn't it?
Experiment, yeah, I guess it worked.
He got the answer, just not the answer he was probably hoping for.
This will be a lark. I can sell anything.
His book, The Dark Half, is all about this, like where he creates the character and he creates another fictional version of himself.
Yeah.
On the cover of The Dark Half, it says, his masterpiece under Stephen King. It's not. It's not one of his best books.
It was the first one I read, though.
Did you like it?
But it was because it was the first horror book I read. I just thought, this is awesome. But the Bachman books tended to be a bit more science fiction than horror. He wrote this in 72 hours.
Okay. He's not taking his own experiment seriously, I don't think.
He was doing a lot of coke back then. That was probably long for him.
Yeah, like, no sleep.
Oh, 72 hours on this one. Normally knock him out straight 48.
But the book was quite different. It was set in 2025. Ben Richards is a normal bloke.
Yeah.
He's not a muscle-bound superhero. He's unemployed and he needs money so that he can get medicine for his sick baby daughter and to stop his wife having to go on the game.
Right.
I believe the character is called described in the book as sickly and tubercular.
Going on the game as in going on The Running Man becoming a sex worker.
Right. Yeah, sorry. Confusing. So he volunteers to join up with the network, which is this propaganda arm of the government, and he becomes a contestant on this show. And they've got all kind of games. There's treadmill to bucks, how hot can you take it, swim the crocodiles, and The Running Man, which is the flagship. And it's about a series of contestants going on a nationwide manhunt, being the subject of that. So it happens in the open world rather than in a studio.
Or an ice rink.
Just whatever space we've got.
And isn't each season like a month long?
Yes, you've got to survive for 30 days.
Right.
And the grand prize is freedom and $1 billion.
And you, but you volunteer, and by part of the condition of your volunteering is you record you're running yourself and send a VHS back to the studio that they play out. So there's no sort of live element whatsoever.
Right.
People just sort of sit and watch the VHS of you on the run. But the main thing, isn't it? The main thing is the fact that the stalkers are disguised as regular people, like a meter maid or something.
Oh, cool.
So you could be running down the street thinking you're safe and suddenly the meter maid would turn around and put a knife in your back.
Right, brilliant.
Yeah.
Good idea, that.
It is.
Yep.
Which we might see if this Edgar Wright version ever happens.
Right.
Yes, although I wonder if he'll adapt the ending, because the ending of the book, it's sort of Ben Richards realised the whole thing is rigged. And so he hijacks a plane and flies it into the TV network and it's very reminiscent of 9/11. I think the last line even concerns sort of fire raining down on 20 blocks around the studio. So, yeah, it would be tough to adapt that, I think.
That's what happens when the Coke runs out. Right, plane into studio. No, there's nothing. Where's my baggie? No.
So the film, let's kick off with a bloke called George Linder, who I was fascinated by. He was the owner of America's largest supplier of lightweight wheelchairs.
Sports wheelchairs.
I listened to an interview with him, and he applied lightweight bicycle technology to wheelchairs and pioneered wheelchair tennis.
Cool.
And because he made all that money, he thought, what can I do next? I want to make movies. And he came across The Running Man in an airport and contacted the author's agent and couldn't understand why this Richard Bachman book that hardly ran any copies, 100,000 copies, was costing so much. He agreed to 20 grand up front, but a huge bump down the road should the film actually get made. He took it to a producer, Rob Cohen, who told him, you've made a lousy deal here. Why is the second payment so high? And that's when his attorney informed him that he'd bought a Stephen King book. He said, I felt like I'd found a Rembrandt in Kmart. I don't think this is a Rembrandt.
And this is the Rob Cohen, isn't it? This is,
yes.
This is the Rob Cohen we know and love from Fast and the Furious, mm-hmm. Stealth, Mummy, Tomb of the Dragon Emperor.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yeah. So we've done films of his before. All right, let's talk about cast. Christopher Reeve was going to play the lead. Very different film at that point. It was reported in 1985. It was going to be a dark allegory when Christopher Reeve was in the lead, and he was a bit more of an everyman. And I think there was some stuff about, you know, he's cast because he's so good looking as well, Ben Richardson. So the women will be voting for him and all this kind of thing. But then it changed. Reeve was out. Arnold Schwarzenegger was in, and it quickly turned into an action thriller with humour because Stephen D'Souza was brought on board and did 15 drafts to get the Arnie version right. And it's this weird thing. It's like the Terminator before and it's like Total Recall after, where when you cast Arnold Schwarzenegger, you have to change everything. Your protagonist can't be what you've written because no one is like him. D'Souza said, I didn't have to destroy King's vision, but instead tailor the movie to Arnold like a suit. He never even bothered giving Schwarzenegger a copy of the book. He said it would have been needless. From circumstance to background to personality, there is zero overlap between the two incarnations of Ben Richards. King later said that this Ben Richards was as far away his Ben Richards was as far away from the Arnold Schwarzenegger character in the movie as you can get. Budget was set at 10 million. It grew to 27 million. That was partly because of Arnie's wages, but also because of some trouble with the directors.
Oh, yeah.
Starting with George Cosmatos, who directed Rambo 2. He wanted to do a shopping centre version of this story. Basically, the Running Man in a mall. The Dawn of the Dead cut.
Well, wasn't it, as I understand it, he wanted to do, it was about the 1% versus the 99%. And the 1% lived in, well, he wanted to shoot it in the largest shopping mall in the world at that time, which was this Edmonton Mall. And so that's where the 1% lived. Yep. But once Arnie goes on the run, it becomes Rambo 2.
Yes. When Richards, this is D'Souza talking, when Richards breaks out of the city, there was going to be a river raft chase. I think he was just trying to get the movie back into the wilderness as he had done on Rambo. He wanted the whole chasing part of the game to be in the wilderness. The producers wanted the budget cut because Matos said no and he walked. And Rob Cohen said, working with George was the worst experience I've ever had in the business. He's the least talented, least cooperative and most horrible person I've ever had dealings with. And they fired him after he spent 700 grand. Alex Cox was approached to direct it. Have you ever seen Repo Man?
Oh, you've asked me this before. I don't think I have.
It's good.
Yeah.
It's so weird.
It's like a weird memory from a late night at some point, but I'm not sure. Mm. I can't swear to it.
His films are so subversive. He also did Sid and Nancy. I think his version of this film would be amazing and probably wouldn't have made any money. Mm-hmm. Another Brit nearly directed it, Ferdinand Fairfax.
Okay.
He'd just made a pirate movie with Tommy Lee Jones. His version was going to be like The Truman Show. The movie was going to be the broadcast. D'Souza said he was making it very British. He said on an English crew, you have to have a tea lady who comes round with a cart of tea and biscuits. When the tea lady came through, the show stopped, the crew stopped, the stalkers stopped and the runners stopped and they all took a break, had tea and biscuits, then started up again. It was kind of like Monty Python. So, yeah, they were running around. I'm not sure what to do with this property. Andrew Davis, as I mentioned, was next. He would go on to do this Under Siege of the Fugitive. And that started well. He worked with D'Souza to undo all this weirdness that had crept into the script. He hired Paula Abdul to do the choreography.
Yeah. Yay!
He hired Mick Fleetwood and Dweezil Zappa. And he hired Richard Dawson to play Killian, which is probably the best thing he did. And he basically was getting the film ready so they could start shooting. But then 8 days into the shoot, he was $8 million over budget and 4 days behind. And the footage he shot wasn't cutting together. There was an issue with a hockey puck I'll get to when we talk about the movie.
That's the thing, apparently, that pushed it over the line.
Yeah, although Rob Cohen says no, it was just the footage was not cutting together and he was too far behind schedule. So he was fired, which is where Starsky from Starsky and Hutch enters the picture. Paul Michael Glazer. And he was brought on board because he had experience in TV, so he could hit the ground running, get it done quickly, do what the producers told him. He had no time to prepare. He said, directing is basically problem solving. When you come into something in the middle like I did, your problem solving goes up about 300%. But he got it shot in 61 days, $17 million over budget. Schwarzenegger said, with such a terrific concept, The Running Man should have been a $150 million movie. Instead, it was totally screwed by hiring a first-time director and not giving enough time to prepare.
You know Paul Michael Glazer's last movie? Mm-mm. It was the 1990s movie Kazam, featuring Shaquille O'Neal. Not the 1990s movie Shazam, featuring Sinbad. Someone will appreciate that.
I get it. It's funny. It's funny. It's good. We should pair those two.
That'll be a short week.
One of them doesn't exist, Vicky. Stephen King agreed with Arnie. Once he saw what they'd done to his story, he forbid them from using his name. But it did predict the future. With the film being set in 2017, I got in touch with Stephen D'Souza at the end of 2016 and interviewed him so I could write an article entitled How the Running Man Predicted All the Bad Stuff in 2017. And it's got reality TV, it's got the internet, it's got the merging of entertainment and politics, it's got fake news. And we can talk about all that when we talk about the film, which I want to do now. Any more?
Nope, not at all.
I think that was very well done because there was a lot more.
A lot more
than I thought. I was expecting a much shorter preamble today.
Troubled production, it's fair to say.
Yeah.
So we get some very 80s graphics and we get a lot of words on the screen. Maybe too much.
Yes, I can't remember.
Telling us the future. There's paramilitary zones in the future.
I mean, it's your classic big three for any dystopian sci-fi. Yep. Its resources are running out, all forms of art are censored, and it's a police state. I mean, I think you can just now say dystopian society.
That
covers that.
That's true.
It does end by saying, when high-tech gladiators are not enough to suppress the people's yearning for freedom, more direct methods become necessary.
Yeah.
I don't 100% know what they mean.
So I didn't get it at first. What they mean then is the bit in the helicopter when they ask Arnie to kill those people. But at first you think, oh, do you mean the game? Like, as in...
Yes, yeah.
So, it is confusing.
So the policemen are the gladiators.
Yes.
Right.
I don't know. Actually, it doesn't make any sense.
That's a great recruitment drive. Yeah. No, you're not a policeman. You're a high-tech gladiator.
You might die. No, what? Yeah, I don't know.
There is a food riot happening, but there aren't any weapons there, and there are women and children there.
How do they know? He says, the heat signature, there's 1,500 people down there. There's women and children. And children give off a small heat signature, and I long suspected that so do women, and now I know it's true. Look at that faint pink glow. Is that a woman?
Ben's told to eliminate them all, and he says... to hell with you. I will not fire on helpless people.
So
I told you they're unarmed.
Okay, there we go. I was
oh, sorry. You were queuing them up.
I told you they're unarmed.
Great. Very good.
I'm not firing on women and children.
So is that the first time anyone's ever been asked to fire on women and children? Because he seems quite surprised to be asked. So it's the first mission anyone's ever said, open fire on the innocents.
Maybe it's his first mission.
Yeah, I felt it was his first time being asked.
He just doesn't see. He's like, oh, is this the job? Oh, I didn't realise.
Yeah, maybe he was in high-tech gladiator costume design before.
True,
he just did the costumes and then they were like, we're down a helicopter pilot. Okay!
So they take Ben out and we cut to 18 months later and he is in the Wilshire Detention Centre and he now has a beard.
It's so freaking weird. Do you know what? I was like, I don't remember this first time round, but now you think about this era of Arnie. I mean, obviously now, like Escape Plan and, you know, Dark Fate, and I think he's got a beard in Last Stand. But at the time, you never saw Arnie with a beard.
You actually don't think he's capable of growing face hair.
It doesn't look real.
No, it doesn't. Because he's such a smooth man.
Yeah.
But he does enter doing something that you've never seen Arnie do before, not carrying a girder, which is literally...
I was going to say, check.
Yeah, I mean, a commando...
Tree?
It's a tree, but we're in the future. There are no trees anymore. So it's a, like, he carries a whole tree in commando. In this, he carries a whole building.
Yes, a whole,
yeah. whole building. But you never see in any other Arnie role, Arnie wearing an apron.
Yes.
He's wearing an apron in this.
Doesn't he wear an apron in Total Recall? I feel like he's working in the same... industrial steel mill place that he works in Total Recall.
There is literally anything D'Souza is anywhere near, because he was kind of near Total Recall, wasn't he? He did something, wasn't
yeah,
he?
Maybe, yeah.
He floated around it. Basically, it's like, Arnie needs a job. It's construction, full stop. He's mm-hmm. building something out of wood, metal, or give him a big fucking drill.
Yeah. And that's the first of many crossovers with some of his other films of this period that The Running Man has. But there's a riot. He throws a man off a platform after saying, give you a lift. How are we feeling about the one-liners in this film?
I think if the first... it bears better on a repeat viewing, doesn't it? Because you're like, oh, here we go. But first time, you're like... Ugh. No, and stop saying I'll be back.
But this is all D'Souza. So basically, D'Souza, after Commando, realised that Arnie could deliver these sort of, in inverted commas, withering put downs.
Sure.
Usually dead people who don't really care. Sub-zero now, just plain zero. Really? So
they're not trying.
But this is D'Souza's whole thing, which is like, you know, I've helped create the Arnie character that we saw, first of all, in Commando, then through Running Man, Predator. All of this, it's like that was created with Commando, with D'Souza, including, obviously, the I'll be back line, which is only the second time we hear it.
And he claims that it's actually him delivering some of the lines. D'Souza, on the Projection Booth podcast, it's a great interview with him. And because he claims he's got such a good Arnie impression, he sometimes helps out with ADR. And he reckons, like, two or three lines here, it's Stephen D'Souza saying them rather than Arnold Schwarzenegger. But he talks a good game, Stephen D'Souza, as you've experienced. You've interviewed him as well.
Oh, my God, yeah. We'll come to it. There's at least one story in this that he tells two different versions of. Like, he's done different interviews, and it's a really, really major difference to the film, and yet he's told two different versions. Yeah. Entirely different. We'll get to it.
So they all start losing their heads unless they can deactivate the perimeter, and this is the scene you talked about, Alex. Chico runs too early, and his collar blows. That was a frightening moment for you then. It's quite a funny moment now watching it, isn't it?
It's good and funny.
But that's because we're just so desensitized. As a kid, you're like, oh my God, you've never seen that before. Now, you literally look at it and go, I've seen better decapitations. Like, you judge decapitation sequences against each other.
But the timing of it feels a bit Monty Python as well, like the corpse running for slicing. And so now Ben hits Los Angeles, which is a shanty town, and he meets with Dweezil Zappa and Mick Fleetwood playing Mick. They're two hippies playing hippies.
Why is Mick Fleetwood in this? Just why? I mean, he's not bad in it. It's just... Oh,
yeah,
Fleetwood.
It is that, yeah.
It was sort of stunt casting because these guys are the counterculture here, and Mick Fleetwood sort of to them represents the counterculture in the real world. So I think that's why they cast him, but maybe cast an actor next time. Is he part of the same underground movement that Dennis Leary is leading in Demolition Man a few years later?
Yes.
Very reminiscent.
Yeah.
So they remove their collars. The freedom fighters want them to jam the network and broadcast the truth, but our man, Ben Richards, is not up for that yet.
No.
It's weird, isn't it? In a society which we are told, ad verbatim at the start, is very, very short of resources. There's not enough food. There's barely any water. There's no oil. We can't power any. What we have is a shit ton of cigars. Almost an excess of cigars. It's like one of the most decadent things in the world. We have no resources. But this guy who's just broken out of prison, he's got a Cuban. He is puffing away on a cigar. We've got too many.
Actually, that was nearly a connection, because when Daniel Radcliffe got cast in Guns Akimbo, he asked if his character could smoke during the film, because he smoked so much in real life. Uh-huh. He just wanted to smoke in the film. And the director said he's got asthma quite bad, so we can't have him smoking. But he could have been puffing just like Ben does.
Okay, I was going to say, if it was like, oh no. No, we can't advertise smoking to the kids in Guns and Kimbo.
No, that wasn't the issue.
Let's get some cocaine!
Ben's now known as the Butcher of Bakersfield because there's footage of him going berserk and firing on innocent civilians.
Yeah.
What?
Just, you know, we talked about Arnie's apron. does anyone care to discuss that yellow hat he's wearing during this sequence?
Oh, I love it. Because
what is it?
What will a hard hat look like in the future?
Is that what it's meant to
be? Yeah, it won't be. It'll just be because it's perfectly suited to a human skull as it stands in 1987. No, they'll be different in 2017.
It looks like a hard hat and a baseball cap had a baby.
Then
someone wraps a tiny bit of twine around it just to show it's a little bit more, I don't know, what, earthy?
It's futuristic, hard hat.
Futuristic twine?
I guess.
He heads to his brother's house because his brother's going to get him out of the city, but his brother isn't there anymore. He
doesn't focus on that very long.
No,
there's
well.
A woman here in negligee.
Why is she working out in her 90?
Because she is in an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie in 1987.
Poor girl.
That's kind of what you have to do.
Yeah.
This is Amber, played by Maria Conchita Alonso.
If Total Recall was made in 1987 instead of 1990, Sharon Stone would be working out in negligee, not a fitness outfit.
Sure, yeah.
3 years was... Big changes. Big changes in those 3 years.
I mean, she's essentially playing the Ray Dawn Chong role from Commando. Mm. It's the same part. And she does the same things. But he sort of kidnaps her, takes her money, takes her travel pass, and buys her a trip on a monitor, which is like the internet that Stephen D'Souza invented.
I couldn't believe it.
Yep.
Good for him.
I asked him about this, and he said there was a thing called ARPANET at the time, I think, but I just made up a term, InfoNet. So I was close, but not close enough to get royalties.
You don't get royalties from the internet, Stephen D'Souza.
But if he created the name internet and they went, we can't think of anything else now we've actually invented it, you would probably have to go to Stephen D'Souza and go, can we use
can
that?
Can we have your permission? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it doesn't sound like it'll ever make any money. What now?
I mean, you could have made money at the start, though. Isn't that Tim Berners-Lee's big thing, is I made it free. I wanted everyone to have a piece
of
this.
Yeah, if someone evil had done it, yeah, you'd have to pay for it.
Well, the internet...
I mean, Internet 3.0, which we'll talk about in the pub at length because I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, no.
I know!
It's my new thing. Wait till we're at a party.
Yeah.
It's Vicky's party trick.
One of my summer barbecues, you can pitch it to people.
That could be the entertainment at your stag do. Vicky's now going to do a talk.
Lads, the entertainment's arrived. Hey, guys!
Hey, guys!
Just got me overhead projector
now,
here.
Listen, who's familiar with Internet 3.0? No one, Craig. Let me badly, drunkenly explain it to you, but promise you there's something in it.
But you have to do it in negligee.
That poor woman. So did she always have a man-sized Hawaiian shirt lying around in her?
Good point.
And also, what is her big fear when she's threatened? Arnie, she's like, I'm not going to come with you. And he goes, what about if I tilt you slightly backwards on this fitness equipment? And she's like, I'm convinced I could slip off at any moment.
I've got some thoughts about it. I think it's just like, it's just a bit of a man writer thing. Like, he has kidnapped her and he has terrorized her and he says, I'll break your neck like a chicken.
Yep.
And he seems to be enjoying himself, but he's meant to be, it seems quite easy for him to do that. He ties her to the thing. And
she's sexy time.
It is a little bit. And she's meant to, then when they get to the airport, she grasses him up and the shot is she feels bad. And
amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like, fuck you. He just kidnapped you. Yep. You don't feel bad about that. Take him down. But a man writer is like, she probably would feel a bit guilty because she kind of let him on.
It's amazing. There is some incredible man writing. There's another bit later on where her and her friend see him in the corridor. And her friend basically says, that guy could kill you and then have sex with your corpse.
Yeah.
But she says it like,
can't wait.
That is the hottest idea I've ever heard. Who could stop him?
Yeah.
He could literally
rip your corpse
and rape your dead body. And no one could stop it.
So
and
hot. That is so hot.
Literally, she's like, I'm going to need a moment. I'm just thinking.
I changed
about
my mind about him.
Because she does it both ways. She goes, he could rape you then, kill you. Or kill you then, rape you.
Yeah, it's a good day's work, Stephen. Well done. Maybe run it past someone.
I just wonder whether, like, the director has gone, okay, read the line. She's gone, my God, that guy's terrifying. He could rape you and then kill you, or kill you and rape you. And they go,
again?
Good, but sexier. Like, it's
good,
Arnie.
But you're into it. You're into it. You like it. You want him to, actually.
Again, an action. Oh,
I can't do this.
And on that deeply sexy moment, let's take a break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
And we're back, and we're at the ICS studios, and we're introduced to Richard Dawson as Damon Killian. Vicky, you like discussing how and why names get picked. So how and why is our villain called Killian?
I'm drawing a blank this week, to be honest. There's nothing there for me in Killian.
Kill you, one.
So let's, a little sidebar here on Richard Dawson. He was the real-life host of Family Feud in America, which is their version of Family Fortune. So he's essentially their Les Dennis.
Amazing.
This is like casting Les Dennis.
Which you should.
In an action. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
Oh, I can see that.
Me too.
The guy who plays his lackey, he was on the Projection Booth podcast as well. He said that Richard Dawson would kick off his day with a glass of orange juice and vodka. And one of Dawson's trademarks on Family Feud was kissing the female contestants, which earned him the nickname the Kissing Bandit.
Yeah.
Oh, those are the nicknames people.
This is direct from Wikipedia. Television executives repeatedly tried to get him to stop the kissing. After receiving criticism for the practice, he asked viewers to write in and vote on the matter.
Oh.
The male response resulted in about 200,000 letters, the wide majority of whom were in favour of the kissing. On the 1985 finale, Dawson explained that he kissed contestants for love and luck.
Oh.
Something his mother did with him when he was a child.
Yeah, it's not the same thing. it's horrible.
He's a baddie in real life.
Yeah, real baddie.
It's weird, isn't it? You sort of think that... It's amazing that like the TV network were like, stop doing that in the 80s, though. Because this is the 80s when he was hosting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's quite amazing because like now you'd be like, you just don't do that.
Yeah.
But back then you'd be like, oh, it's a sort of, and he was an older man.
It's a family show. Yeah.
So you sort of think, I'm going to give you a little kiss for good luck. But the fact that they were told, you know, he was told, stop doing that.
Yeah. Oh, it makes your heart sink, doesn't it? You want to go on the show, you want to have a nice time. And he's like, but you have to kiss me. Oh,
but you smell of orange and vodka.
I do quite fancy a screwdriver.
What? A screwdriver, Richard.
So, as Alex said, the ratings have peaked. The Justin department is calling. He sacks a guy with a mop. That's our kill the cat moment.
Oh my God, I wrote down kill the cat for you.
Awesome.
Because I don't really give a shit about save the cat moments.
Is that a phrase, kill the cat?
I didn't think it was, but I thought you would have invented it.
And I just did.
Yeah. Oh my God, it's so perfect. And there's another one in Guns Akimbo. It's like, it's full of kill the cats this week.
How is it a save the cat moment?
Well, it's the opposite
it's
of a save the
cat.
Okay, right. Okay, I've got you. Kill the cat. Yeah.
This guy, honestly.
Sorry.
Get on the kill the cat train.
You know, it's only my second week back. But yeah, okay.
So he's picking contestants on a screen. Did you see what comes up on that screen when he's going through people that
I saw a baby.
A baby comes up.
It's really funny.
It's a baby. There's a baby in prison.
Yeah, it's really funny. And he's called like something babyface.
Mado babyface March.
It's really funny.
Clearly about 1 year old. What did that baby do to be put in prison?
Well, fuck knows, but something very bad.
Stole a rusk.
Stole a rusk.
They still make
no,
rusks.
Maybe.
No.
Maybe. He took candy from another baby.
Nice! Better. So he had a bit of time, to be fair, Chris did, to think about it. You went too soon.
Yeah, I just wanted to say the word rusk. Don't get to use it very often. Yeah. But the casting of Richard... Wanted to say Richard Dawkins. Richard, which would also be interesting.
Or Les Dawson.
Richard Dawson. Like that bit where he's so nice, the guy with the mop's face.
Yeah.
And then the minute he's in the lift, he's like, fucking fire that guy. That is exactly, I think it was Roger Ebert who said the same thing. He's basically playing every game show host in America
okay.
at that time. And also, I think from meeting people in TV, not so much now, but back in the like early noughties when it started to die, that's like a lot of people.
So you're saying Les Dennis was like this?
I'm not specifically naming names, Chris.
I take it back.
Wow.
I take it back.
I think we might have to beat that.
Yeah, okay, fine. We can take it out, it's fine. I'm scared of beep. So.
Just we can call him Chris and let people guess.
No, then they'll think it's me. he calls the entertainment division of the Justice Department and the president's agent. I guess that makes sense. Ronald Reagan was the president at the time.
Yeah, but I also thought, I'd never thought of it, like, the president must have an agent for, you know, when they're like, I'm not going to do this anymore. Sure. So Barack Obama must have an appearances agent, or did, when he was like, my time is nearly done.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's not so far-fetched.
I think towards the end of his governorship, Schwarzenegger made an announcement that he was now accepting scripts.
Great.
Because he was
ready to work. Yeah.
I like the idea that really struck with me is the idea of it's a reality TV show host giving orders to the military in this sequence, which obviously is another prophetic thing because Trump hosted The Apprentice in the US then became president and was literally giving orders to the military.
Yeah.
And who replaced him as host of The Apprentice?
Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Is that true?
Yeah. It's all very circular. So he makes Ben an offer he can't refuse, which Ben turns down. and then Killian has his friends and will put them in the contest if he says no.
Just they're not really friends though, are they? Because when we meet Mick Fleetwood, these friends are like, you're not one of us, you're not with us, you're not with us, you're not one of us. And he's like, I don't give a shit, I'm going my own way. So then when they're like, your friends are here, you think like, we're not friends, so don't worry about it. You send them in instead.
It's because he's a good guy.
Oh, okay.
Sure. Wow, I hope the three of us are never on the show.
He just kidnapped a woman and said he's going to break her neck like a chicken. He's not a good guy.
Okay, but neither of us have. Put yourself in Arnie's shoes. Chris and I are there.
Oh,
and it's
right,
like,
yeah.
They're going to send Chris and me in.
Instead
of
me.
If you don't do it.
Yeah.
Who has had the fight most recently out of the three of us? You. So, therefore, you are the best equipped to go and fight people in an arena of death.
What I don't know is that true? You're making me think it is true. You're gaslighting me into thinking that's true.
How long ago was Chicken Shop Gate?
What Chicken Shop Gate?
You were outside a chicken shop and you got into fisticuffs.
I didn't get into fisticuffs. Did I shout at someone?
I'm pretty sure there was some punches thrown.
Maybe. I don't know. It's possible.
The only time in the last 10 years someone's approached me looking like they want to fight is because of you talking too loud in
the
pub.
Yeah, 100%. I hold my hand up. It's always my fault.
And we could make an alternate version of The Running Man called The Loud Woman. The Shouting Woman. And it's basically it's you and some people chasing you and it's who can shout the other down in a confrontation.
I would win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So in that scenario,
yep,
you'd go in for us.
Yeah, okay. All right, yeah. If it's not physically, if I don't have to kill anyone in an ice rink, I'll go in for you.
Yeah. You just have to shout at some people who get in your way.
In a chicken shop, done, 100%.
The first arena is...
MFC, whatever they're called, many fried chicken.
We should actually get to the game because we're 40 minutes in and it still hasn't bloody started, but now it is Running Man time. So there's a great introduction to the thing. I love the way they sort of build up the hype. See Killian getting made up, the poor people placing bets, the dancers, and then it's showtime. They introduce the guest runner, Ben Richards, and show him doing his massacre. They show previous winners basking under the Maui sun. Mm. That's important for later. They've paid their debt to society. And then it's time to start running. Do we like the jumpsuits?
No.
Okay.
You see, I do. I mean, it makes the whole thing, like I said, look 1984 rather than 1987.
Yeah.
But I like it. I mean, I guess I like it because, like, his mates are given silver ones, but because he's special, he
yeah,
gets a
he
gold
gets the golden one. Quick question. So do women ever go on the Running Man, ever, do we think?
I don't know.
So when Amber goes on it later, she's got a low-cut suit.
Mm.
So why has she got a low-cut suit? So the answer would be because they do have women on, they want the women to, quote-unquote, look good.
Yes.
So they've got a pre-made woman's suit for her. But if a woman has never gone on it, why has she got a low-cut suit?
You're definitely overthinking it.
I'm not.
You've got a hair, makeup and costume department on any big TV show. This is the biggest TV show in 2017.
Okay.
You can grab a singer and modify a singer sewing machine and modify...
a dancer's outfit.
Yes, okay. That must be it. Okay, that'll do.
Thank you.
I just need to close that loop, but it was bugging me.
What would you like to see Arnie in if he wasn't wearing this ridiculous gold lycra, though?
Just maybe like a bit of armour. I just feel a bit weird that you can sort of see his body, but I suppose that'd be cheating.
Yeah, he's meant to be killed as soon as possible.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you have to look at it like this. The minute he is taken out of that suit and given an option of wearing anything, he puts a body warmer on. So
yes,
left to his own devices, he's in a worse situation than if he wears that.
Okay.
Alex, what does Ben Richards say to Killian before he goes through the pipe?
I'll be back.
Why does he say that?
It's upsetting.
Well, because at this point, Stephen D'Souza had told Arnie, I think you should make your catchphrase. This is obviously Stephen D'Souza's words.
Of course it is.
Yeah. Stephen D'Souza says to Arnie, I think you should make your catchphrase, I'll be back. We did it in Commando. Let's do it again here. And this will be the second time you do it. And it is the second time he does it on film. And it does become his catchphrase.
Yeah.
And Killian does say only in a rerun, which is quite a good riposte.
Mm.
Sure.
We meet Sub-Zero.
It doesn't work with I'll be back. I'll be back is always the last line in that conversation. But because they're still working out the rules here, Killian actually has a better comeback. Normally, I'll be back is when and well, you're off.
Yeah.
So we got Sub-Zero, who slices contestants with a razor blade hockey stick, turning them into bloody sushi. Yeah, played by a wrestler called Professor Toru Tanaka.
Mm.
I don't know why he's hockey. Why would you pick him to be hockey?
Well, it's like, isn't it like you said, they were like, we can only film this in an ice rink.
Sure.
So we'll retrofit it. No?
Yeah,
I honestly guess thought that was the truth. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, so the heroes get chased around a warehouse by guys on a motorbike and Sub-Zero skates at them and he's got exploding pucks.
Yeah. It's good that each stalker is undone by their own particular weaponry, though, because it's quite nice that like they are better armed than Arnie.
Mm. Yeah.
And yet it's these accoutrements that they've brought with them that are ultimately their undoing.
Mm-hmm.
But he kills him with barbed wire,
which is part of his Sub-Zero set.
So he garrots him, and you do the line, Alex. Again.
Here's Sub-Zero. Now, Plane Zero.
It's the worst one of the lot.
It is. That's open that line.
Unbelievable.
Makes no sense.
They do get better. The buzzsaw one's pretty good.
Okay.
But then I think they're embarrassed by them because it's barely audible as he's walking away. He says he was a real pain in the neck. It's like, I think this is quite half-hearted here.
And that's definitely ADR because, you know, it's
so it's D'Souza probably doing it.
Yeah.
Buzzsaw next. He's got a chainsaw. Mm. This actor that same year played a character in House 2 called Arnold the Barbarian.
I believe his last role of note was as a barbarian. He was still working in 2000 and something's The Scorpion King.
Very oh, good. God, I've seen... Do you know, I always say when I used to work at the cinema, there's a few films I've seen 15 to 20 times. Yeah. Scorpion King was one of them.
Oof.
Yeah.
Ouch.
It was a bit of a patchy one, Scorpion King.
Unless you asked for that shift.
No, The Mothman Prophecies. I can't remember what
the
one was.
Oh, my God, Jesus Christ.
I didn't last in that job very long.
The Mothman Prophecies was one of those movies that I went to see on its release in the middle of the day. You know, I used to go to the cinema in the middle of the day. This was Goldsmith's time.
Yes.
And I went to see it in the middle of the day, and it was still in one of the big screens at the Odeon, and I was the only person in the cinema.
I mean, we said this apart from me, who was working.
So let's talk about Dynamo as well.
Dynamo, yeah.
So, oh, I love Dynamo.
So Dynamo is a opera singer come futuristic Roman centurion come sexual predator.
It's Valhalla, isn't it? Because they play Ride of the Valkyries over his entrances. Right. So he is a Viking warrior from Valhalla, but I believe.
Because this is the future.
Yeah.
This is the future Viking warrior.
Yes, well, you look like Blackpool Illumination.
It's a very cheap circuit board.
Oh,
isn't
I quite
it?
Like it, but it is mad later when it's like, oh, it's not waterproof then. That's crazy.
Amber's entered the fray now. She's a mystery contestant because she had sex with two men in a year.
Sorry, she laughed like that. Sorry, carry on.
What's the joke?
That's the thing I told her. I can't, no, I'm laughing because. Because I can't get my head around the time reference. In 1987, was everyone like, slag? Or in the future,
no,
would they become
joke.
More like moralistic about things like that?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. I didn't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And she's quite happy with that. The only thing that annoys her is they say that she's Ben's accomplice because she wasn't. She's like, yeah, of course I did. So Buzzsaw sort of drags Ben around on the back of his bike. They fight man to man. He says, I love the saw. That saw's a part of me and now I'm going to make it part of you. And then Ben says, that's all right, keep it. That's his one-liner there.
No, don't. They're bad, but his one-liner comes later where Amber says, what happened to Buzzsaw? And Arnie says, he had to split because he sliced him from the crotch up.
Mm.
Which is tricky because he will later be like, this fake news, I'm not a murderer. I'm murdering now quite a lot of people.
For survival.
Yeah, but in a brutal, gory way, like he cuts him from the bollocks up. Like...
I mean, you know, he's in the middle of a chainsaw yeah. fight, which is a right. thing. Yeah. You don't get to go,
and second...
listen, there is a much nicer way for me to kill you. I don't want to split you from the groin to the neck.
Yeah.
So if you just put that down, I'll just, you know, I'll be happy.
And seconds later, he refuses to kill the Christmas tree.
He
because
does.
He...
For some reason.
He will not kill a helpless human being.
Okay.
Because he's a good guy. So we've lost Vice, one of his so-called mates. And now we lose Laughlin. He dies as well. But not before he sends Ben and Amber to the broadcast centre to sort this all out.
Yeah, I'm for this bit, I wrote some satellite guff.
Yeah, who cares?
But don't they even do this stuff in the Hunger Games even? It's all about...
It's always taking down the central thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, and broadcasting the truth and what have you. Killian, I like Killian. He's still sort of game show man, even off screen, where he's offering Ben a 3-year contract to be a stalker. Yeah. He's always the salesman. Ben says no, and instead he's going to ram his fist into his stomach and break his spine. If he say that, you got to do that later in the film. That's how this works.
Yeah, that's true.
Fireball enters the fray.
Hey, our old friend Jim Brown.
Jim Brown.
You ever want to listen to an episode where there has never been quite so much venom spat at a movie? You want to listen to Mars Attacks featuring Jim Brown?
Right.
That was a fun episode.
By two people, not by three people.
Yeah.
Someone got the joke. So he's got a...
joke is still
is it
optimistic.
The cows on fire joke? That's the one joke.
No, the one joke is Tom Jones at the end. Fireball, he's got a jetpack and he's got a gun that fires fire and he's fireproof.
The
he's living
thrower.
Up to his name.
It's a flamethrower, Chris. gun that fires fire. I mean, it is, but it's classically known as a flamethrower.
I was trying to make a joke, didn't I? The audience is turning now. People are betting on Ben.
Not just anyone, Agnes. Who's there every show.
Mrs. Yeah. McArdle. Yeah. Yeah, she's not happy. Amber finds the dead bodies of the victorious contestants who were supposedly in Maui. Mm. Now, I'm not running a totalitarian state, even though it might feel like it on this podcast. But wouldn't you dispose of the bodies?
It's just not even tidying up, is it? It's lazy. And you've also got a man that throws flame that could sort that out for you straight away.
Just letting them decompose. Also, there isn't a camera in there in that room, which is going to become important later, for me anyway.
Mm. So how about the put down for... Fireball's death. My gas line. What a hothead.
Jesus.
Fireball's dead. They order Captain Freedom to the floor.
Yay.
And he appears dressed a bit like Metal Mickey.
It's a joke too far, this, because it's like, I mean, they've given him this new costume, but you could not have a fight in that costume.
Okay.
It's too silly. Do you not think? Weirdly, there's another connection here to do with Guns Akimbo. Two costumes that take a joke too far that it undoes the logic of the movie.
Okay.
Because if they're thinking of sending Captain Freedom in, like, that costume is, it's not functional. And the bit in Guns Akimbo where she dresses as a police officer and infiltrates a police station while obviously it being a joke costume with a massive fake mustache.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, I don't get this anymore. Are you laughing at your own movie?
I thought that was funny. I liked it.
Okay.
But we'll talk about that on Thursday. I shout out to Jesse Ventura. I think he's great here.
So yeah, brilliant.
The film needs more of him, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Former wrestler turned actor turned governor of Minnesota turned Harvard University fellow Jesse Ventura.
Wow.
Mm.
Yes.
He has had a good career.
Yeah.
With some very strange theories and thoughts these days.
You always do this. Speak. You always do this. Last thing I read on Wikipedia was he
Harvard.
Was a member of the Green Party.
Okay. So,
the British Green Party?
No, the American Green Party.
Okay.
I was surprised they had one as well.
I don't know why. Well, they just don't seem to be that into it.
Which I think is bad that I've made this huge assumption. It's like like when I read Jesse Ventura was into the Green Party.
Doesn't even Brighton. I didn't know that.
Is he friends with Caroline Lucas?
So we've got a lot of dead stalkers. So what do you do? You get Paula Abdul to choreograph a dance step.
Oh, I love
it. The sad dance, I call it.
It's so good.
Lovely stuff. They're mapping Arnie's face onto a stunt double to show footage of Captain Freedom killing Ben and Amber in a ring that uses that tech. So,
which came from an idea because they were approached by a graphics company, weren't they?
Yes.
Rob Cohen saying that, look, we've got a new thing to keep your stuntmen safe. We can map a face onto an actor's face.
They even had a good word for it. They called it a synthespian.
Mm. Which is sort of crazy because I think the first time that I remember definitely seeing this in the modern day was Triple X, weirdly a Rob Cohen movie, where Vin Diesel, they mapped Vin Diesel's face onto the stuntman who goes off the bridge and the car and parachutes at the very start. Which is what, 2002 maybe? I can't remember when Triple X came out. But that's a full 13, 14 years after this technology was first introduced.
Well, it's because they go, we've got this technology. And someone goes, show it us then. And they're like, no, that looks shit.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Yeah. The demonstration didn't work, but it sparked an idea in Stephen D'Souza. But as he said, they messed it up. So this is him talking about what happened. So in the footage they shot, Captain Freedom kills the girl, and he said, I saw a test screening and the audience was stunned that he killed the girl. She dies in Arnold's arms and he gets up and beats the living hell out of Jesse Ventura, the most brutal beatdown you've ever seen. And then at the last second, Jesse throws Arnold onto spikes and kills him. And the audience lost their minds. They couldn't believe it. You could hear a pin drop. They got the cut back to the studio and you see the dead body, and Killian goes, go to commercial, and they push a button and you see the digital mask come off. So we had a test audience, handful of people who said, I didn't understand the thing at the end. And it's because the effects weren't really finished.
Mm.
And so it was confusing to them. And so he said 12 out of 600 people didn't understand it because of the missing effect shots. So some genius suggests you have the scene where he explains it earlier. So they flip the scenes. The problem is when you now see it in the movie, you know that Arnold and Maria's death are fake. So during the fight, you don't get excited and your pulse doesn't rise.
Yeah.
I assure you, the first cut, when you thought the fight to death was real, the audience went insane. And Stephen finishes by saying, if you have a sophisticated DVD player, put it back in the right order. You have my permission.
So I fundamentally agree with Stephen D'Souza in principle. Can you imagine in 1987, you watch an Arnie movie and they have a scene where Arnie dies and you'd just be like, what? Oh my God.
Mm.
It'd be like the Fight Club twist or something. Yeah, it would be a huge moment. And to screw that up is insane. However, he does have two versions of the story.
Mm-hmm.
One in which he talks about how his original version is like it happens, Arnie dies, and then they cut to Amber and Ben watching this, and it's the reveal that they're still alive. And he's like, and then Arnie obviously, you know, they go off and they finish the movie. In the other version, he says, and which is really fascinating, this is him talking. I can tell you that it wasn't until a test screening of Die Hard that I saw an audience go as batshit crazy as when Arnold came back to avenge Maria. When they killed her, the audience was completely stunned, dead fucking silence, almost a collective moan. Then when Arnold got up and was furious, they were like, kill him, kill him. They wanted revenge because, I mean, nobody did this. No one kills the leading lady. So it sounds to me like he's saying in one version, they kill Amber.
Yeah, that's what I just said. That's what I just read out.
No, but for real. Like, as in not like, as in like they kill the character off.
Do you think that's what he meant?
I don't know. That's what how I read it as. Okay. You always think she was going to survive every version.
Yeah.
Okay. I read that and I was like, no way. That would be even more insane.
So they upload the video anyway, showing that Killian is a liar. And they use footage of those dead contestants where there wasn't a camera.
Mm-hmm.
Problem. A hole in your plot. But they know the truth. Ben appears. He's still alive, but we knew that. The audience goes crazy. In the film, we don't go crazy. Dynamo goes after Amber. She pulls down his pants and then a sprinkler kills him. It's such an anticlimax with that character.
I can't believe she doesn't get to do it. Yeah, it's like they were too shy of going, oh, now she's going to murder someone, even though he was trying to kill her.
Yeah, and
he's going to rape her.
Trousers around his ankles.
He's got no pants on. Yeah.
No, he's got Y fronts on. Big, yes. Big baggy Y fronts.
Yeah. Okay. But she's got the attitude. She's like, well, did she do a huge line? Like, she's like, I'm definitely going to kill you. Oh, no, that sprinkler's done it.
Yeah. A dick. What does she call him? A dickless moron with a battery up his ass.
Yeah, you.
But talking of camera angles, don't you find it funny that we see the footage in the helicopter at the start when Ben refuses to kill the rioters? And that's like, you're watching a movie. So, of course, you've got those camera angles. When they play back into the studio,
it's like,
wow, you've got cameras in that helicopter that are very high quality.
It's quite well directed.
And
actually,
also, they've got every angle.
Yeah.
Like, you have film cameras of every angle.
That's
like,
come true. We've got body cams on all cops now, so it's true.
Is it?
They nailed it. They predicted everything in the future. So we've got our final standoff between Ben Richards and Killian. Killian calls on Sven.
Is that Ben's brother?
No.
So it's not Ben's brother.
All right, because the security guard person.
Yes. Yeah.
So he's like, oh, now you're fucked. And he's like, no, I'm just going to go. So I was like, oh, that must be your brother then.
No,
I feel less bad about my misreading of Stephen D'Souza's story.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. Don't worry about that.
No, but I mean, that's obviously not his brother.
Sure. I mean, I thought it was.
Well, he's a big bodybuilder.
You don't think he'd go, all right, bro. Well,
yeah, no, I was like, oh, that's, well, maybe they don't get on that. I don't know. There's like a backstory.
He's
like,
you got my Hawaiian shirt? I'm on
it back. I left it with that girl that you're getting off with in a minute. Yeah, I don't know. He's like, I'm going to my brother's apartment. Never mentioned again. And I was like, well, you wouldn't say that for no reason. And then a man helps you just cause. Must be your brother.
He helps him because Killian earlier like said, steroids making you go deaf, which is why as he walks off, he goes, gotta go get some new steroids.
Yeah. For my brother. Right?
For my brother Ben. Yeah. Stephen D'Souza added it in ADR. It's very quiet. But if you have the subtitles on, for my brother Ben,
that's right.
The guy you're with right now.
That is Sven, played by Sven Ole Thorsen, who we've talked about before because he gets cast in every Arnold Schwarzenegger film
because
he's the best mate.
I think he's done
20 Arnold Schwarzenegger
like
movies.
Brothers.
Well, he's a bodybuilder. I can see why you would make that connection. And
Thank you, Chris.
I have bored to say that subject, but it's for the bits. So Ben sends Killian down the pipe. And he explodes in a poster of himself.
Yeah, his bobsleigh is made of petrol, so that's
handy. He rips something off the back, doesn't he? Arnie fiddles with a dial.
The petrol cap.
Yeah. He unscrews the petrol cap. Yeah. He does something. It doesn't matter what it is.
Yes.
But he definitely does something to suggest that it's going to explode.
And what does Arnie say?
Don't know.
Will that hit the spot?
Nope.
No, but that's the tagline for the advert that he's gone through.
Oh, good. Oh, then yes. Yeah. For the soft drink.
You see it on the TV earlier, the cola, it's called That'll Hit the Spot.
Yep.
And that's why Arnie uses the tagline.
All right, marginally better. And now Ben Richards is in love with Amber at the end. What? Oh, God. Before we do the bits and bobs, I want to talk about plagiarism. So I talked to...
Normal. Regular news section. Guys... I brought you here today, yes, on the surface, to talk about The Running Man, but really, we're here to talk about plagiarism.
Because someone did sue The Running Man. So I mentioned The Most Dangerous Game, but there was a 1958 story called The Prize of Peril by Robert Sheckley that was turned into a French film called The Prize of Danger, and it's very, very similar to The Running Man. Much more similar to The Running Man movie than the book The Running Man is. And so, yeah, he sued 20th Century Fox for copyright. And I think he won. But I don't speak French and there's no English articles about it. So I was doing the Google Translate.
Okay.
But yeah, he said that it was a moral victory and I won money. It barely covered my legal costs, but my rights have been recognised.
It was all worth it, actually. Yeah, it ruined 10 years of my life, but it was worth it.
It's weird that he's the 20th Century Fox, though, who released The Predator. Yeah. You mean TriStar? The people who he sued the people who made The Running Man as opposed to just any film studio. Predator? Yeah, I've got a manuscript somewhere. It's about
Le Predator? Fuck it, yeah. So.
I told you, Google Translate's rubbish. But D'Souza isn't happy about plagiarism either because he said that one of the producers of American Gladiators, which was before the UK TV show Gladiators, they sold the show using clips from The Running Man, telling the network, we're doing exactly this except the murdering part.
That
format sold all over the world and made much, much, much more money than The Running Man. So D'Souza is gutted about that.
I do remember the first time I put Gladiators on ITV on a Saturday night, I was like, oh my God, they've basically made
they've
The Running
it.
Man.
Yeah.
It was. I was like, oh, it's all prophetic. The Running Man's going to happen.
American Gladiators used to be on ITV on a Friday night at 3 a.m. when we were little kids and I would record that and watch that.
The American version?
The American one, yeah.
Was it better?
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah, it was a bit more. It didn't have John Fashanu for a start, so that made it a bit better.
A wooga. But did it have Wolf?
It didn't have Wolf.
Wolf was. I'm surprised they didn't give anyone else better identities apart from Shadow, who was clearly on drugs. but Wolf was like, wow, they've got a character here.
Yeah, it was
my
great.
Best friend Stuart. Hi, Stu. He used to live near Wolf's gym, and whenever I'd go, the bus stop was outside Wolf's gym, and Wolf was always standing outside his gym, hoping to be recognised.
Great.
He would just sort of stand there, hoping someone would want a picture.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Who was your favourite gladiator?
He's going to say Jet.
It's Alan Partridge's favourite.
I mean, I'd be lying if I didn't. Jet was the one, like, all of us. It wasn't like one guy in the group had it. Was it like, oh, I love lightning? It was like, everyone was just like, it's Jet.
I tell you who you'd like in American Gladiators then. Lace.
She's on the wrong show.
It's a suggestive name.
I think that was the point.
Did she do it in a negligee?
Good call back.
Thanks.
Let's do the bits and bobs. All right. Alex, favourite scene?
My favourite scene is the rocket sled scene. I think it's so key to my love of this movie, the idea that you have to, as a contestant, go in this rocket sled and be fired off down a very, very long tube at high speed to enter the gaming arena. Because A, it makes the gaming arena seem far enough away from the studio that Ben can't just kick through a wall and be back in and go, I'm back. It's like, it's still part of the studio, but it's a long way away and it's dangerous and the audience have to be kept in one place to be safe and it's all happening over there, but it is still fundamentally part of the studio. And that whole transporting down the rocket sled really helps me understand the geography of this and ups the danger for me. So the rocket sled.
Excellent answer, Vicky.
The same, for the same reasons.
Oh, wow.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I mean, not so
did
much...
you just not write one?
No, I did write one. But not so much for the geography thing. I did appreciate that. But for just the kinesis of the direction, it's a bit weirdly better than a lot of the other stuff. Mm. It looks dangerous. It looks fun and all the rest of it. And it's just really well shot. Mm. So, yeah.
And to use it again to kill the big bad.
Sure.
Clever.
Very good. I haven't picked that scene.
Wrong.
I probably am wrong. I like the preamble before the start of the show. I like this montage of the host doing his thing, the audience getting pumped up, the dancers, the contestants being put in place, the audience placing bets. I think it really brilliantly builds up the anticipation for a show that's a bit of an anticlimax.
Yes.
All right. Most valuable whatever. Alex.
Richard Dawson.
Obviously.
Fact. I mean, absolutely. The fact that he never did another film role after this. I mean, he went back to Family Feud in the 90s and like he had a career after this. I went down a Richard Dawson wormhole.
Me too.
Married to Diana Dawes.
Really?
I didn't know that. Yeah. You know, he started out British. Didn't even know he was British.
No.
Born in Britain. Mm-hmm. Started out on the variety circuit. Got his big break on Benny Hill's Find a New Talent TV show. So, yeah, massive Richard Dawson fan of this movie.
As you say, it's his final credit, and you could see him, and I haven't mentioned this person, but you could see him in Paul Verhoeven movies playing some seedy executive or corrupt businessman, which bits of The Running Man feels like nearly Verhoeven, the fake adverts and the
So I'm just to follow on from that. I actually think Richard Dawson is Arnie's best non-physical nemesis in any of his films. And actually, there aren't loads of them, but I think he is better than Cohagen in Total Recall, and I think he's better than James Caan in Eraser. And after that, there aren't really many memorable ones, but he's definitely the best non-violent nemesis Arnie's ever faced.
That's a good point. Vicky?
Well, I did have Richard Dawson, but I feel a little bit upset about
the
unwanted advances.
So, the Kissing Bandit, it's got a name.
So I'm going to
pick... It's got a pleasant nickname.
Yeah, it's actually fine.
pick the baby then.
The baby or Paula Abdul, because I do love the dancing.
Yeah,
I think all the dances are brilliant.
Yeah, I've been watching Winning Time, this great HBO thing about the LA Lakers, and she was so much a part of that.
Yeah, yeah.
She did the Lakers, and then she did this, and then a year later, she was a pop star.
Is that the Adam McKay thing?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really enjoying it. But yeah, that's, I mean, and they do look and dance like the Laker girls.
Yes.
Where they changed, you know, this entertainment before the game from being like a marching band to basically strippers.
And I think as well, because they do have a funeral dance, and you're like, that does seem sad, but also sexy. It's really good.
Anyone who's not experienced Paula Abdul's pop career, can I put you in the direction of Opposites Attract
with MC
Scat Cap.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I always wondered about that name.
Scat Cap?
Yeah.
It's troubling. But then you have the Scat Man.
Call him MC Rap Cat, but not Scat Cat.
But didn't he perform scat?
He rapped.
Right,
He didn't scat, he rapped.
Okay.
Scat Man scatted.
Yeah, scat-a-dabba-da-dee-ly ba
There we go. I'm the Scat Man!
Oh, I remember that!
You'll never learn. It was quite a negative
Everybody
song.
Satisfied one way or the other, so check out my message for you. As a matter of fact, don't let anything hold you back. If the Scat Man can do it, so can you.
I've just had a flashback when we were in the karaoke box because they haven't got Scat Man John! Like, they've never not got Scat Man John. Yeah. You are fucking kidding
they
me.
They didn't have any songs for women.
They didn't have Scat Man John. Probably a good thing. Can you imagine three out of their minds drunk people trying to go, skibby dee 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 dee, you'll never learn.
I'm picking the Kissing Bandit as well. So what would you
softens the blood.
What would you change, Vicky?
So the face map technology should be what is used to best the baddie at the end, because just getting him into the studio and going, now you go down the tube or whatever, when they break in and they do...
He's got some bad put-downs. He doesn't say, now you go down the tube
or whatever. So they should just use... Sorry, let me just take a minute. The medium has lied to the people, fake news, right? Mm-hmm. So then the rebels break into the Death Star and say, oh, no, wait, look at this montage. This tells you the truth. But a normal audience, like, well, the medium has lied to us once. Why should we believe this medium again? Television has lied to us. So you need to use another medium. So you could do, so the best way to do it is a confession from Killian himself. So you trick a confession out of him by using his own face map technology against him.
Very
because
good.
Then that cuts through any of the audience just go, oh shit, is that the montage? Fine, that's the truth. And I don't think they would believe it as easily. So you need to get the man himself to go, of course, that's bullshit.
Yeah.
And so you do it like that.
There's a funny quote from D'Souza talking about the fact that in his movie, Killian, the Donald Trump character, when it's revealed he lied, there is a revolution, an uproar of the people. And in reality, when everyone goes, well, Donald Trump's a liar, people just went back to their phones.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it actually had no effect on people's, on the country.
It made them like him a bit more.
Mm. Yeah.
Grim. Alex?
It's Jesse Ventura. It's he's brilliant, and he doesn't get an ending.
He literally disappears from the film.
Of any sort, and I really would like to see a bit more of him. And I did think about the character, Ben's brother, in the movie.
Yep.
So let's call him Killian's bodyguard instead. It might be easier. I think you could collapse characters there. I think, because he's not a stalker anymore... And I know you like collapsing characters, so you can tell me if I've missed a beat here. But I think he could be Killian's bodyguard, like a stalker from yesteryear who is still trading on his past glories. But now he doesn't work on screen. He's Killian's bodyguard. So he's always there, always around. And Killian's like, you might have to go back in. And he's like, I'm not going back in. And then it's him at the end. And they sort of have a mutual respect. Jesse Ventura, Captain Freedom and Arnie in that moment, and then he walks off and that's his ending.
It's interesting. Yeah. Interesting you say that. And this, I didn't laugh at you about the Sven thing earlier like Alex did, because my change is Sven is Ben's reprogrammed brother who has been trained and brainwashed.
There we go.
It's there. It's all there. They set it up.
Yeah.
And they've cast a bodybuilder in that role. And that's your climax. Oh, Ben has to fight his own brother.
Oh, nice.
It's nuts. And then they end up, you know, he'll then knock something loose in his brain and he'll remember who he is. And then they team up.
And then they team up. That's why this works. Yeah. See? This, I'm pointing, wow. Everyone, pointing.
This isn't a podcast. This is a writer's room.
Oh my God, don't say it. Quite exciting.
Excellent. That and mine was the correct change. So I won that bit.
All mine.
Mine was pretty good actually this week, to be honest.
All right, three good
changes. And that's what it's like in a writer's room.
We all did the work. But one idea has to win out.
Thank you very much. I've won that bit, but now it's time for you to win something because we're going to do a quiz.
Yay!
So this week's films satirise these kinds of shows. Let's see how well you know your actual quiz shows. I'm going to give you a quiz show's catchphrase, and you've got to give me the show. So, for example, and this is one of the questions. For example, if I said, "I'll have a pee, please, Bob."
Blockbusters.
You would have got a point for Blockbusters, but you don't.
But I did get Blockbusters. Psych out.
I was resting.
Psych out.
I was resting.
So are you ready?
Yeah. Are they all from the 80s?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah.
I'll be going by the name Professor Alex Zane for this. Like Professor Sub-Zero.
Okay.
Okay. Shout out the answer when you know it.
Yep.
Come on down.
The price is right!
Point to Alex.
Leslie Crowther.
If it's up there, I'll give you the money myself.
Family Fortunes.
Correct.
Oh, fuck off.
Les Dennis.
Is that what he used to say?
And then Vernon Kay, give him some credit.
Yeah, when they would say something stupid, he'd say, "If it's up there, I'll give you the money myself."
Oh, I loved that show.
What do points make?
Prizes!
What's the quiz show?
Points make prizes! Pets win prizes! The Generation Game!
No, close though. Same guy said it.
The thing where they turn the cards around. The card, the fuck is it called?
Don't give him the clue. You shouldn't give him the clue.
Strike it lucky!
No.
No! Double or nothing!
No. Cards is in the title.
Give me cards, right?
Correct!
Yes!
We got there in the end.
Oh God!
All right. Do you want a moment? Just chill. Just chill. I've started, so I'll finish.
Mastermind. Question time.
No, it's Mastermind.
Oh,
correct.
Is it?
That's also something I've been known to say during sex.
Jesus Christ.
Nothing in this game for two in a bed.
Oh, I don't know. Because I'm not a fucking old man.
Oh wait, hang on. It's
the classic cult show from the 80s.
The Generation Game.
No, nothing in this game for two in a bed.
Bingo.
I'll give you a clue.
Bullseye! No! No!
Alex got it. You need this to take it to a tie break.
Okay.
This clue is also the title of an excellent film. Your starter for 10.
A University Challenge.
Correct!
Oh, thank God.
Very good film, starter for 10, if you haven't seen it. Right, tiebreaker.
Do you know what my brain was full of? It was like game shows. I was sort of preempting what the catchphrase might be.
Yeah, and it puts you off.
Yeah. No, I'm sad to see no every second counts in there, but then I don't know.
You don't know what's going to about to happen.
Every second counts.
It's good, but it's not right.
Oh, God. A catchphrase!
Yeah, it's catchphrase.
Oh, your little face!
And you'd literally just said catchphrase in the sentence before.
I feel sick.
Do you feel sick because it was so close? Or do you feel sick because we're back to regular service?
I suppose it's both. It's the same. Oh, because you have to do it in the voice. It's good, but you have to do it.
What was that?
You have to do a Roy Walker impression. Everybody knows that.
He was not Jamaican.
No.
Stop it.
Jeez.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
And
do
I
it.
Thought my accents were bad.
Come on, Vic, I want to hear you.
No, I'll do it later. I've just realised what mistake I've started to make. So.
I mean, it's recorded. We'll be able to listen to it back.
It's good, but it's not right.
And you didn't stop it.
That was Vicky, not me.
Apologies to our Irish listeners. All right, so that was a quiz.
What's Mr. Chips doing? Really menacing. What's he doing?
Yeah, that is true. Was that now, wasn't it?
Clue time. My choice is next week. Oh. And the clue I'm going with is Teens on the Town. That is Teens on the Town.
I actually realised I don't know what you've picked for next week, so this is really exciting.
You're not meant to. We pretend that no one knows.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I didn't finish.
Didn't we stop doing that in week three?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we ever overtly confessed.
Let me just cover it. I actually just realised I don't know what we're doing next week. As usual.
Very good.
Thanks.
And that's your lot for this week. If you are new to these here parts, thanks for visiting. Make sure you check out @ClashPod on either Twitter or Instagram. And if you want to make a difference, subscribe to the podcast, tell a friend to listen, or even write a review, as long as it's a nice review. Anyway, I'm rambling now, so thanks again. And we'll be back on Thursday with Guns Akimbo.
This was a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.